Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Students to Business Days. Did you all have a decent trip here to the event? Okay. Well, welcome, and I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to welcome you officially and to talk with you about a very important topic to all of you, since this is about technology, and that is, unfortunately, that IT is dead. The title of this session, CSI, Crime Scene and Investigation, IT, Who Killed IT, and What is Next? My name is Dan Holm, and I am an MVP, a Microsoft Valued Professional in SharePoint Server. I've been one for 5 years, and before that I was an MVP in Active Directory Directory Services. And my day job is as the Chief SharePoint Evangelist for AvPoint, which is one of the large SharePoint ISVs. So my day job is to travel around the world and talk with customers, large and small, and help them succeed with SharePoint specifically and with their goals of aligning that very powerful platform with their business technologies. I've been a consultant for 17 years, and I really enjoy the opportunity to help organizations succeed with their strategic goals using technology. When I'm not traveling, I get to go home to someplace quite special. I live on Maui, Hawaii. This is actually the view from my patio at home, and this is where I hang out on the weekends. So I hope I get to welcome you sometime to Hawaii. You will have my email address, and you're always welcome to come, all 1,000 of you. And I am, as a consultant, I also get to work with some very exciting organizations, including NBC, which is one of the major television networks in the United States. I am the Microsoft Technologies Consultant for NBC during the broadcast of the Olympic Games. So we're in the process of setting up the technologies that will support our efforts to broadcast the Olympic Games back to the audience in the United States. I also speak at many of these events. I write books. Most recently, we published the SharePoint 2010 training kit with Microsoft Press. And probably the most important information here, because this is a social world, my username for Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, and my email address. I definitely encourage you to follow me, stay in touch, and email me if you've got any questions that I can help you with, whether it's with SharePoint, with the core Windows stack, or with what you're trying to achieve in your lives and in your careers. So, breaking news. IT was found dead in its hotel room yesterday. And what we're here today to do is to examine the crime scene and figure out what has happened to IT and what it means to us, especially to you as you launch into your careers in what used to be IT. And so, CSI, Crime Scene Investigation. With any crime scene, we need to first examine the deceased. We need to understand what IT was. And many of you are young enough not to have gone through this, so I'd like to share a little bit of insight from this very old man to you as far as what IT used to be for the last several decades. For the last several decades, IT was information technology, and it was organization-driven. It was about delivering major initiatives to help the organization be more competitive. And information management within IT was really about taking what used to be done on paper and making it electronic and centralizing the information in data centers and servers. And then once that information was digitized and centralized, pushing it back out to users with mapped drives and with intranets and things like that. And all of the tasks that IT was tasked with were generally about managing infrastructure. We were rolling wires out and installing data centers and servers in our organizations and then deploying personal computers to our employees so that they could connect to those centralized servers and then deploying major applications and operating systems on top of those. So it was all about really big efforts, about heavy lifting that impacted the entire organization. And that's one key characteristic of what IT used to be, is heavily organizationally scoped, meaning what we were doing was really for everyone in the organization, taking big steps forward. And what that meant for many users was an IT organization that would visit a user once every 3 years and drop a new package on their desk. And that package would be a new desktop with a new version of Microsoft Office, a new set of applications, a new set of rules, and then IT would go back into its corner and answer the phone when you had problems, and 3 years later they'd come back with the next version of Windows, the next version of Microsoft Office. And so users and organizations were in this culture of big jumps forward. And that worked for many years. I've been through deployments of Windows 95 and Windows NT 4, Windows 2000, Windows XP. Those came every 3 or 4 years. And then for many organizations, when Windows XP hit in 2002 or 2003, users said, okay, I'll see you again in 2005 or 2006. And here we are in 2011, 2012, and many users are still sitting on Windows XP desktops. They haven't seen their IT organizations make a big organizational change for a very long time. Who wouldn't want to kill IT? Because the world has moved forward. And so something in the world, as it has moved forward, has really changed the way we all think about IT, the way we need to deliver IT, and what it means to us in our careers. So let's examine the suspects. Let's look at who could have killed IT. First, and probably most importantly, well, not most importantly, sorry, I forgot my order. First, mobile devices. Mobile devices, as they grew in popularity over the last several years, have enabled people to start working with information anywhere. And there's now an expectation that users should be able to access email, which itself is starting to become an outdated technology, social networks, chat, communications, data, applications, and of course, entertainment, on any device anywhere they happen to be sitting. And how many of us go to cafes and restaurants with our friends and everyone's sitting around, you know, checking their phones while they're supposed to be socializing and visiting in analog, real fashion? One small note, there's now a new trend that's starting in the United States, and I don't know if it's happening here in Belgium yet, but it is called the phone stack. Has anyone heard of the phone stack? Yeah, a couple of people. It's when you're with friends at, let's say, a bar or a cafe, you create a phone stack in the center of the table. Everyone puts their phones down in the center of the table, and the first person who picks up their phone pays the tab. That is an interesting trend now as a way of going back to civilization in the middle of this digital world. And so I encourage you to start a phone stack next time when you're with your friends. And if it's your phone in the middle, it's a lot easier to win if you turn your phone off so you don't even know it's ringing. So the smartphone has certainly changed the way we think about the world and access to information. It's also now changing our mindset. And let's use that as a transition to look at the next suspect, us, the users, the world, the culture. Users are now smarter than they were when I started in this business. And I would actually say we are now in the world of user 2.0, maybe user 3.0. Users these days are much smarter technologically than they were in the past. There's less resistance to technology. We all grew up with technology, so when we get a new device, we're not scared of it. We just dive in and start clicking, and we know we can't really hurt anything too badly. So we have a new mindset about adopting new technology that will enable us to move forward faster. But in traditional enterprises, there are still pockets of resistance to that change that make it a little bit challenging to move forward. Another key aspect of user 2.0 is coming from our mobile devices. We now have a mentality that if there's a problem we need to solve, there's an app for that. We learned that from a fruit company out of California. There's an app for that, and we now have this mentality that if I have a problem, I can get a solution right now, instant gratification, very cheap, and very granular. The solution is very pinpointed on what I want to solve right now. And so we now have this mentality that we should be able to work anywhere, have access to information anytime, even when it's not appropriate, like at a bar or restaurant. We should be able to find solutions to the problems we have, and we shouldn't have to wait. And we're also smart enough with technology that if we feel like we are waiting, we will go out and find a solution ourselves. And so one of the challenges organizations are facing with traditional IT is that if the IT organization doesn't respond fast enough to what the users want, they go out and find it themselves. If a set of consultants wants to collaborate with customers and IT doesn't provide them an extranet, they'll go to Dropbox. They'll go to SkyDrive. They'll go to some technology out there that meets their needs, and they'll just circumvent IT, which is a threat to the organization and to IT. At least they perceive it that way. But what it really is a call to action. It's a call to action that the organization needs to start responding differently. So mobile devices certainly are a suspect. Users are certainly a suspect. And then, of course, there's the cloud. The cloud has really change the world, and it's almost unfortunate that many of the folks in this room are too young to really have seen just what a big impact it's making, as far as enabling the very characteristics we've just been talking about being able to access data anywhere, access solutions anywhere, connect anywhere, anytime, and very importantly, to reduce the need for the organization to actually roll out cables and wire every time and hardware every time that a solution is necessary. The investment in infrastructure has reduced, the requirement for investment in infrastructure has reduced so significantly in the past few years that as organizations adopt these technologies culturally and move their legacy technologies into the cloud, their cost story changes completely. I've spent most of the last 17 years of my life as a consultant having to calculate return on investment, ROI, for projects. And the investment was always so high that it became difficult to justify the R, the return, because the return could only be justified with soft savings, like increased productivity, better employee happiness, things you can't really measure with a dollar sign. Now with the cloud, the dollar signs are reducing so fast on the cost side, and we are now able to respond and scale to our organization's needs so much more rapidly that it really will change the way organizations are able to account for, on the books, their IT investments, which is very, very, very exciting. Then there was the recession. And this might be one of the major factors as to why users might still be sitting on their Windows NT on their Windows XP desktops. The recession certainly made a big impact on the world. And in 2006, especially 2007, and certainly 2008, as the economic crash happened, IT organizations ground to a halt, and they stopped spending money because the organization forecasted less revenue, they got scared. And the timeline of the recession is, of course, different in each part of the world. But generally speaking, corporations are now in a position where they have stopped spending quite a long time ago, particularly on IT. And they have, I'm speaking particularly of American corporations at this point, they have a lot of cash. They're actually sitting on it. But they're afraid to spend it now until they really are certain that the economy is going to pick up and get going. So we've had about 3 years of stagnation in serious investment in the technology. At the same time that many organizations sort of stalled in their development of IT, IT changed almost 180 degrees. And that it's during this recession that the cloud became real, that services and apps and mobile devices and the entire stack of technologies that Microsoft has invested in, from Azure down through all of the platforms now into Windows 8 and looking forward into Office 15 and the Wave 15, all of these things have changed and have set up what I think is the most exciting time that I've seen in IT since 1999. I think what we're looking at right now is a champagne bottle that has been corked and shook really hard. The organization really wants a lot, and they're not spending on it. And all kinds of things have developed that are going to allow us, when we uncork that champagne, to ride a very, very explosive wave in technology investment. I really believe, and I'm hearing it from every company I talk to, that they're at the tipping point where they've waited too long to make changes, and they know it. They're feeling the pain. They have the money. They're just waiting for that one last green light to start tearing loose on these new technologies. And I think what we're going to see is really, rather than an evolutionary step in technology, which has been happening since maybe 2000, we're going to see a revolutionary step in 2012, 2013, and 2014. We're going to see companies basically throw out the old completely and bring in the new. They're throwing out XP and IE6. They're bringing in Windows 7 and even looking at Windows 8. They're looking at SharePoint 2010, and they're even chomping at the bits to get the information about all of the new products that Microsoft is releasing this year with Wave 15. So I really believe that we're in a point where when companies plan for fiscal 2013, there's going to be a tremendous amount of movement. And very interestingly, and coincidentally, Microsoft is this year having one of the biggest years they've ever had for product releases, We get a new version of Windows, a new version of Exchange, a new version of SQL, a new version of SharePoint. We get all kinds of developments in the cloud with Office 365 and Azure. So Microsoft, coincidentally, is at a revolutionary point itself, and at a really critical point for its business, where it is feeling its own pressures from consumerization, from the internet, from the cloud, that it has now responded to with these new products. And I honestly think this is one of the most exciting 18 months to 2 years coming up that I've ever seen in my career. So it's a great time to be where you are. So while I think the recession certainly has killed old IT, I also think it's enabling a really exciting time moving forward. So now that we've looked at the suspects, who really killed IT? The answer is all of the above. All of the above have contributed to IT being very, very, information technology being very, very dead. So for in the 80s, in the early 21st or in the 20th and early 21st century, we already talked about what IT was. Let's talk about what IT is now. Now, IT is consumer driven. That's the user 2.0. The culture of organizations is evolving to a point where users, customers, however you want to define that, believe that they can get a solution for a problem. They are driving the problem, and they believe that if they can't get a solution internally, they will go outside. So everything is now consumer-driven in the broadest sense of the word, the consumerization of IT. Information management has also changed. What used to be focused on centralizing information and then connecting users to it is now about distributing the information. Again, the idea that you can get to data from anywhere and with any device. And also, very importantly, that users now understand that they don't have to simply take everything that's given to them. They can pick what is important. So, and what I mean by that is in older days, you would map users to a map drive and they'd have 5,000 files in there and they would need 10 of them. But they would still see, you know, the other 4,990 that they didn't need but had permission to. And you would have an intranet, and this is where the intranet is dead, I think, as well. An intranet, which was an employee-wide portal, where certain people in the organization would decide what everyone else should read about. And then, in the last, 2005, 2006-ish, when organizations got smart enough to use group policy to set their homepage on Internet Explorer, they would make that the homepage on Internet Explorer. So whenever someone opened up the browser, it would open up the intranet with all of this published information. And you know what we see when users open up their browser? Click. They close and they go to the page that they want to go to. They go to their mailbox. They go to the things that help them get their jobs done. And now we've got both the technologies and the culture that users are saying, I'm going to pull to me, I'm going to consume the information and the functionality that I need to get my job done. And that is a big cultural shift, and organizations are certainly adapting to that. But it's all about consuming and personalizing information. So I see what I need. Now, of course, there's still a need for organizations to send out certain types of information. But what many organizations are fighting is trying to help the communications department understand that they don't run the world anymore, that users simply aren't listening to what is being broadcast, and to help the internal communications processes understand that they should be very selective about what is important, and then give users the ability to consume, to subscribe to look at feeds, and to use all of the modern technologies to decide what they really need to get their jobs done. And in the end, in my opinion, that's a great thing. When I look at the broad user base in the world, I see a lot of people who have one and only one desire when they go to work, which is to be successful so they can go home and have a life. And that's a really, really good need. And I really have a great optimistic faith in the user base that I believe if we give them the tools to do exactly that, to get their job done and be successful so they can go home and have a life, that we will actually end up, we will all win. That they will start taking responsibility to consume what they need. We can do less because we're able to scale our own efforts more effectively with technologies like the cloud. And that's a very, very good thing. And finally, IT tasks. The tasks that IT now has to perform have also transformed significantly. Where it used to be about major infrastructure, data centers and servers and desktops and operating systems and applications and the next version of Windows and the next version of Exchange, now what it's heading towards is instead of managing the infrastructure, optimizing the infrastructure. And there's a really big difference there. And as you head into technology, you want to have your antennas up as you look at companies to work for and look at opportunities. And watch for those companies that understand the difference between optimizing infrastructure and managing infrastructure. There's a difference between feeling like you have to own everything just because that's the way it's always been, versus looking at the world as it is now and saying, some things I might need to own, I might need to keep on premises. But every day and every month, there's new opportunities to put things up in the cloud, whatever that might mean to you, that allow me to take advantage of the infrastructure that someone else is managing. And as long as it meets my real business requirements, that's all that's necessary. And a valid business requirement is not, I'm going to do it today because that's the way I've always done it. You need to look deeper into the requirements to understand how to optimize technology and leverage infrastructure in the cloud. And do keep in mind that as we all talk about the cloud, we should be thinking not just about Azure and Office 365, because as important as they are, that's not the only cloud. Organizations outsource their IT and outsource their cloud to other major providers, some of whom create private clouds. Some organizations create their own internal private cloud. So the cloud can be everything from an on-premise cloud to a very public cloud to something in between. So we're now responsible for optimizing our infrastructure. We're responsible for supporting many, many devices. It used to be organizations really, and some still do, try to really contain what PCs you're allowed to order and bring to work. That's just not going to work anymore. Everyone comes to work with devices, and we're going to need to find ways to allow the organization to meet its goal despite the fact that they might be running on devices that are owned by the individual. And I think one of the exciting developments in that space are some advances that some companies are making in virtualization for mobile devices, where soon you on your phone will have two SIMs, one for your business, one for your personal, and two operating systems running that are firewalled from each other. So you can have secure enterprise data on one partition and one virtual side, and you can have your personal environment in the other. That's definitely coming down the road. We've said there have been many announcements about that kind of advance. And we'll see a lot of that kind of thing where we're going to be bringing virtualization and cloud types of technologies into our devices to help ensure that the business can do what it needs and the individual can achieve what they want. And one of the most important things, second to last, is that we're now responsible for deploying solutions. Rather than deploying Exchange, which is a giant platform that lasts for many years before you deploy the next one, we're now going to be able to look at the specific requirements that part of our business has. And I didn't know I had a soundtrack. We're going to be able to look at the specific requirements that a business has for a specific problem and deploy an app, deploy a solution to that problem. So what we're doing now is much more granular and much more scoped to individual requirements. So rather than taking big jumps forward, we're now taking little steps forward. And that's a huge cultural change for businesses. Businesses had to develop strength in the past in a culture that allowed them to take huge jumps forward every once in a while. And now they're having to learn to walk and maybe run the distance rather than leap the distance. And that's a huge cultural change. So where IT used to be information technology, that's why I think IT is dead. Information technology is no longer the business we're in. I believe the business we are in now, and especially you, is innovation technology. I think IT is all about innovation technology now, which means we listen to our business, we identify problems, we innovate solutions that leverage technology, but we don't necessarily manage or own the technology. We build upon platforms, we leverage existing infrastructures, we use the cloud and people's personal devices, and we innovate solutions. And that's where IT changes from being a bunch of plumbers and electricians to being a service that provides real value to the business. And again, from a financial perspective, that's a huge change for organizations, because organizations typically look at IT as a cost center. And IT really can be a revenue producer now, because it's innovating change that will actually increase revenues for the organization. So think about these cultural implications of IT as you go out into the world, as you look at opportunities that you're facing. I hope you all have the opportunity to plug yourself into some of the stuff that's here on the right-hand side of the screen so that you can be on this wave and enjoy what's happening. Now, what I don't want you to become is the next victim. You don't want to be downsized because you resisted change. Now, most of the people in this room are probably not going to fall into that category, but the organizations we go into sometimes are. And so what can you do to survive? And what can you do to help your organization, your enterprise, your employer survive the changes that have now happened? What we're going to now look at are some concepts related to governance, which I think is one of the most important concepts for anyone going into IT to really understand now, because it's what enables the change from old IT information technology to new IT innovation technology. So we need really two major things in our tool belts as we go into business. We need two huge skill sets. In addition to understanding technology, we need to understand governance and management. So let's take a look at both of these. First, what is governance? Governance is a word that is becoming a buzzword, particularly in my space, which is SharePoint right now. Everyone talks about governance, and they misuse the word. And what governance really means comes from a Greek root word, which was related to steering a ship. And so it's really about steering. It's about going in the right direction. It's not necessarily saying exactly where you're going, or in many cases, it's not even how you're going there. It's just that you are steering, that you're navigating and going in a specific direction. Governance is a multiple-layer concept where the business has a strategy, and there is business governance that helps the whole enterprise move where the business wants to go. If the business wants to get into a new market, that's its strategy. We need to steer the business that way. If the business wants to scale globally, that's their strategy. We need to steer that way. And then within the business governance, there you have finance and marketing and manufacturing and engineering and all of the different functions of the business. They need to be governed in a way that steer them in the same direction. So in the case of IT, we need IT governance that is able to help all of IT move in the direction that the business wants to go. And below that, we have what you would call service governance, which is helping a specific component of IT steer in the direction that IT and the business are going. So in the case of SharePoint, we have SharePoint governance, which is a very, very big term in the SharePoint space right now. And I'm going to talk about governance broadly speaking, but I'll use some examples for SharePoint because it's a hot technology right now that I certainly have more insight into than some others. Wrong direction. So governance defines people, processes, policies, and technologies that deliver a service. Now, this is specifically service governance that we're talking about here. And if you think about governance visually, you start with the idea that your business has needs. We talked about the fact that users just want to get their jobs done. The business just wants to achieve its goal. That's what's really important. And as much as I think all of us in this room love technology, I think we have to admit technology isn't important. The business is important. And it just so happens that technology can help the business achieve its goals. So we put technology into the business, and we deliver value with that technology. That we'll represent that with SharePoint as an example. SharePoint as a platform is exceptionally powerful. It delivers all kinds of business value, real business value. And you know, Microsoft's marketing team will talk about this every 24 hours a day, but it's real. SharePoint I see every day delivering significant business value to organizations. But the question is, how do we make that service work? Well, we tend to sometimes forget that we need to help the business understand what it can get from the service. We have to communicate the value of the business of the service to the business. And governance's role is to really act as an interface between the service and the business, so that the business knows what it can get out of the service, what it can expect from the service, like uptime, recoverability, resiliency, security, those kinds of things. And it also helps the service get what it needs from the business to survive. Governance should also help the service get the money it needs from finance and get the information it needs from users of the service. So governance is a service layer, and for those of you who are developers, you can think of it as a service layer between the business needs and the capabilities and functionality of the technology itself. Now, why do we need governance? Well, these are the roles of governance. First and foremost, governance sets expectations. And we talked about this a little bit a moment ago. It allows the business to understand what functionality to expect, service levels, the roadmap of technology. In other words, saying this year we're going to, you know, deliver collaboration, and next year we're going to do social, and the year after that we're going to do business intelligence, whatever the case may be. It also helps communicate risks and rewards and costs and benefits. And we'll see some examples of that in a few moments. Governance defines roles and assigns responsibilities and says who's responsible for making decisions and executing procedures related to the service. And very importantly, it helps verify performance. One of the weaknesses I see in organizations is that they throw out a service and then they don't make sure that the service is actually meeting the requirements of the business, which can lead to two problems. When you deliver a solution to a business and you don't measure it and you don't know what you're supposed to be measuring, you could fail expectations. And then users don't trust that service anymore. And if the service is capable of delivering additional value, even really significant value, they don't trust that when it comes time to deliver that value. So we can see that in situations where platforms fail simply because users weren't really told how to use the service and how to get the most out of it, and we weren't watching the service to ensure that it delivered performance. The other challenge that happens is that sometimes we deliver a solution and it's too successful. And we deliver a solution based on a certain set of requirements, and we assume it's going to be adopted at a relatively slow pace. And then it becomes hugely successful, and users adopt it. And we're actually seeing a lot of this in the SharePoint world right now, where people put out a SharePoint as a collaboration tool, and all of a sudden, users see how powerful it is, start doing all kinds of stuff with it, and before we know it, as an enterprise, it becomes a mission-critical application with terabytes of data in it, and we only expected it to have gigabytes. And we're not able to respond to improve the service to support its success, and then it starts to fail. And I actually have a customer that I came into who had their SharePoint farm melt down over a weekend, literally melt down. You could watch the data disappearing from the farm because there was a bug that they had not governed effectively, and it literally ate the farm. So you've got problems both with a service failing to meet expectations and then also being too successful. And you need to be able to respond to both scenarios, and so being able to verify performance is super important. Knowing what you're going to measure, measuring it, and keeping on top of it. So that's governance. What about management? Management is yet another layer in this picture. And management is the layer between the technology and governance. So management is the layer closest to the technology. This is the set of tasks related to deploying a technology, administering it, configuring it, troubleshooting it, monitoring it, auditing it. All of those are concepts about management and ensuring that the technology runs according to the requirements that have come from the business through the governance layer. So it's important to recognize all of these layers. Governance really is about understanding the business and being able to translate business requirements to technical requirements. Management is about taking the technical requirements and implementing them on a particular service. Both of these are very important. And what I see as a consultant is some companies are very good at governance but not at management. Some are very good at management but not at governance. And it helps to really recognize the symptoms of those problems. If a company is very good at management but not at governance, what you typically see is a service that is so well managed, it's so locked down in order to ensure we are running it and it's successful, that the business can't get the value it needs out of it. It's so locked down that users can't do what they really need to do. So the business needs are being forgotten. On the flip side, if a business has governance but not management, they recognize the business need for, let's say, collaboration, and they deploy a service, let's say SharePoint, and then it catches fire and it develops into terabytes of data and it starts to crash because it was too successful and wasn't being managed effectively. So it's really important that we have both of these layers, and hopefully that will help you understand some of the conversations that are happening in the community right now about governance particularly, and understanding it's a multi-layered thing, and people misuse the word sometimes to include what really should be management. So governance is about taking business requirements and translating them into technical requirements that management can then put into a service. And governance includes concepts of project management, which is represented by the cycle shown on the slide here. Let me take a quick look at my time. Okay. So how do we actually establish governance? And again, the thesis here is that governance is what's really going to allow us to transform IT from that infrastructure-focused organization to something that is really, truly agile and moving with our organization. So I'm going to present several steps here that you should really think about and incorporate into the way you approach the business of IT. Whether you're an IT professional, a developer, a business analyst, we all need to help our organizations move forward in this space. So, first, you have to understand enterprise strategy. Some of us love technology, and we forget, again, that it's not the technology that's important, it's the vision that's important. It's what the company is trying to achieve that really matters. So you have to understand the enterprise strategy. Now, sometimes you'll be able to discover the enterprise strategy just by looking at what the enterprise says. Sometimes an enterprise communicates its strategy very clearly. Sometimes a business doesn't. Especially when you get down to smaller businesses, it's sometimes really hard to know what the strategy is. People haven't really thought about it. They're just doing what feels right. And what you have to do at that point is reverse engineer the strategy. You have to look at what the business is actually doing and figure out, oh, okay, that means that the company is moving in this particular direction. So, for example, you might look at the fact that you're opening up offices in different locations and realize that the strategy is to scale geographically, whatever the case may be. So you have to understand the vision of the business as a whole, because governance starts at that top layer of strategy and business governance. Then you have to align your service with that strategy. If you love technology, as many of us do, and you want that technology to deliver the value you know it can, and to be successful in the place you're applying it, you've got to find a way to align that service with your company's vision. So figure out how to communicate the value of the service specifically in the way the business wants to hear it. You may know that your service can do 25 different things. Pick the two things that you know the business wants to hear. So if, for example, your business wants to increase its sales to existing customers, maybe that's its strategy, and you know that your service has the ability of doing business intelligence and providing insight into your customer transactions, that's what you want to communicate. You want to align the long-term vision of your technology with the long-term vision of the organization. Master the politics. Understand who is involved in an organization. Again, if you love technology, that's great, but it's the people that matter in the organization. Identify all of the players who are going to be impacted by your technology. Identify who is driving the need for a specific service, because sometimes it's finance driving the need for a service. They want to cut costs. Sometimes it's IT saying, we've got this great new technology. Sometimes it's the users who've gone out and picked a service like Dropbox, for example, and you're needing to bring something back inside and deliver similar functionality. So understand who's driving the service that you're working with, who's impacted by it, and understand the political dynamics between each of these groups. The politics in business, unfortunately, can't be ignored, and it helps to align yourself with the strong political players in an organization. And I hate to tell you, but IT is usually one of the weakest political players in an organization, because users have learned not to necessarily rely on IT. They know that the last time they really saw IT was back in 2003 when they got their Windows XP desktop. And so if IT now comes forward with a true statement about how valuable the cloud and mobile devices and Azure and blah, blah, blah is, that might be true, but they might not believe it. Whereas if you can align yourself with executives or legal that says this has to be done, or finance who says it's better this way, if you can align yourself with the right political player, you can achieve the goal that you're trying to achieve. And make sure that as you do work through the goals you're trying to achieve, that you establish teams and communications channels that represent all of these politics. 4, establish good project management. Now, I'm sure most of you in school have gone through project management courses. There's many project management models out there. They all boil down to basically defining a problem, designing a solution, developing the solution, deploying it into the environment, and then delegating it to operations. In other words, making it production ready. Now, within the development phase, we've got all of these models for iterative development, maybe Scrum, Agile, whatever you want to call it, where in the development cycle, we release a small piece of functionality. We test our assumptions that it's meeting the requirements. If not, we refine our requirements, revisit our design, and revise the code. And both of these are very important pieces. You've got the development cycle, and you've got the project cycle. One of the things to be sensitive to in business is that some businesses don't understand the difference between these two cycles. If you're going through the big cycle, that is a project. That is one thing you're trying to achieve. You're trying to achieve X. You're trying to develop a way for customers to access data in your application. That's the project. Within the development cycle, you're ensuring that you're meeting the requirements of that project. What you don't want to have happen is someone say, well, we also should extend information to vendors. A new requirement in the development cycle that actually really should be its own project. Because otherwise you get into these spin cycles where the project you really started with never finishes because new projects get added as if they are new requirements to the existing project. So watch out for the difference there and help your organizations be successful with both the project cycle and the development cycle. Sorry, my slides are a little challenging here. Master solutions architecture, which is the process of taking requirements and turning them into design specifications. So when you're going from when you're in the definition phase, before you go to design, you have to take what are business requirements and turn them into design specifications. Now this diagram is very big, very crazy, and I'm not going to go into the whole thing right now. This is a whole separate session. But the point is, get very good at helping your organization understand how to go from business requirements to a solution architecture. Because that is, again, something that many organizations are weak with, that once you master, helps you move faster in responding to business needs. Define roles and responsibilities. Understand who's necessary to make a project successful, and understand where your skill sets are. I think these are the main skill sets required to deliver effective service in an organization. Someone has to be able to identify the business needs. That's business analyst capabilities. Someone has to determine what the best solution is. That's your solution architect. Someone has to build the solution. That's your developer. Someone has to deploy it. That's IT and maintain it. And someone has to manage the project. That's your project manager. Those are the key skill sets. And if you are strong in one of these, work and developing yourself in some of the others. And I'll tell you, in the customers that I work with, what I find they need most of all are solution architects, business analysts, and project managers. A lot of us are very smart on technology. We can develop a solution and deploy a solution. What organizations really are hungry for are people who can manage a project, identify needs, and architect an effective solution. For each solution that an organization builds, it needs to track those solutions over time. So we deliver solution A today, solution B tomorrow, solution C the next day. We need to keep track of and validate and measure performance so that next year we realize that solution A is no longer meeting its requirements, or solution B is now getting overburdened by success. So make sure that you're not only looking at each individual project, but at the portfolio of projects that you're involved with. Evolve your platform. All of us are very tied in right now, especially in the Microsoft space, to big platforms like Windows, especially the new Windows 8 platforms, Azure, SharePoint, etc. And all of those platforms deliver lots and lots of functionality. There's two things that I think are important to always remember, which is when you're delivering a new solution on a new platform, don't take shortcuts. Don't do what is cheap, easy, and fast today in order to meet a solution, if that means tomorrow the solution is going to fail, lose credibility, or not be able to support the next set of requirements. So as you build your solutions, build your platform, and don't sacrifice that. Last but not least, and perhaps most importantly, this is what it's all about: turning IT into an agile organization. So IT needs to be able to go through these cycles over and over and over. And the very last bullet there, it's a little bit hidden by the logo, is the most important, which is do it again. This is all about going through this cycle over and over and over and over in very small pieces. This is the idea of, there's an app for that. We build a solution, and then we do the next one, and then we do the next one. That do it again may seem really obvious to you, but it's not to organizations. Organizations are not generally accustomed to IT being agile. They're used to big leaps forward every few years. So help your organizations not only build agility into IT, but communicate that agility to your users so that your users actually understand that if they don't get everything they want today, it's okay. They'll get it tomorrow. Because right now, many users and organizations think, if I don't get it today, I'm never going to get it. It's going to be 3 years before I see a change. So build agility, communicate agility, and that is really the key of taking IT from information technology to innovation technology. These are the steps. I hope you're able to meditate on these some. There'll certainly be a recording of this session for you to review. I hope it's been valuable to you, and I most of all wish you all the best in your careers moving forward. I truly think that the next 2 years are the very, very, very best time to be coming into technology. I think you're going to have great careers, and I wish you all the best. Stay in touch and enjoy the rest of Students to Business Day. Thank you very much.